From the land of Grand Theft City in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 6th day of September 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, Harry Cooney will be here from Growmark. He's in Bloomington, Illinois, to take up the agricultural energy sector. Along the way, we'll take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast. That with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, September corn up a quarter, $3.16¾. December at $3.28½, finished unchanged. The March futures at $3.38¾, a quarter higher. July at $3.53¼, three quarters higher. In December of next year at $3.71, up a penny and a quarter. September soybeans, 5¾ higher at $9.74¼. November, $9.59¾, up 7¼. The January at $9.63½, 7¾ higher. And the March contract at $9.67, 8½ cents higher. July of next year at 9½ cents higher, $9.74, the settlement price. And finally, the bean oil up a dime. The bean meal, $3.40 higher. Wheat futures finished 2¼ lower at $3.71 in the September. July of next year at $4.43½, down 2¾ cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the October down $2.75 at $99.52½. The October feeders down $4.50 at $127.57½, and lean hogs down $1.97½ at $58.77½. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne. Thanks for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend.
It was fun. We enjoyed some time on the lake with the coolies yesterday. So.
Oh, well, how are Paul and Pat at this time?
Oh, just wonderful. Always, you know, we rode around talking about different things in the grain market and what was going on. And our only yields in beans so far has only been from one producer, but they're averaging over 70 bushels an acre on the beans so far. But those are just one batch of some 2-4 beans over in our area.
Yeah, so there are some combines beginning to pick their way around in beans. I've seen some corn. I haven't seen actually any yields on corn at this point, but I know there are some folks that have been shucking early corn. I can't imagine it's very low in moisture content, but it's happening. And despite all of this, we have higher prices in Chicago for both corn and soybeans, though corn struggled to get there for the day.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people are wondering, they're going to wait and see what the government says next Monday. But, we heard some reports of some combining corn down around St. Louis, and they were 10 to 20 bushels below what they thought it was going to be. Didn't get the numbers, actually, but some of the guys down there were talking about that. And some very early corn on some poor ground done about 175 over closer to Indianapolis. But that was one where he planted a 92-day corn trying to get the corn off so he could get some tiling done this year. That's not a real representation. So a lot of corn looks like it's going to be ready before a lot of these beans are down in our area. I couldn't believe driving through the country yesterday how much we've seen this corn dry down in just the last week.
USDA, of course, as you mentioned, next week on Monday, 11 a.m. Central Time, will update its crop production, its world agricultural supply and demand estimates. Any early indication of which way they'll go?
Well, you know, if we can pay attention to Informa and FC Stone on Friday, it doesn't look like they'll raise the beans a little, leave the corn the same. Allendale come out with their numbers today. They were 172.6 and 48.5 on the beans. We are having some people, and some of the talk today that kept things up was we are going to see, you know, fair shots of rain as you were reading the weather forecast there. Maybe some excessive rain in some areas is going to cause a little more diplodia. We're hearing much more talk about that among some of the people down there. And sort of in the Mid-South, they haven't got many beans and that done, but the rice isn't the milo is poor and the rice is coming in okay, but they think the beans are suffering down there from a little lack of too much moisture early and then a lot of heat here as of late. So maybe we'll see some areas come back a little bit, but all in all, I think government's going to stay pretty high in their numbers.
Do you think corn can hold if we continue to push the yield up, even in the U.S. government numbers?
You know, the dollar was down enough today that I think the dollar is what held the corn and the beans pretty good. You know, we were down more than a point on the dollar. The weekly export shipments this morning were higher than expected. CONAB dropped there. The South American crop, 1.5 million metric tons on their figures today. We're trying to find a bottom right here until we can see some actual corn yields, because I think there's a lot of people in the country are thinking that 175 is too high.
What do you think it might be? Where should it
be? I think, you know, like I say, it's probably between the 168 and the 175. I think that Allendale is probably more realistic in that 172 bracket.
Yeah, so there are many that are in that 172 bracket. If USDA does back off to 172 on Monday, does that make much of a difference for the marketplace?
I think it gives us a little strength. I don't think it's going to give us a great amount of strength. I think that what a lot of people are looking at is if we do have some more rain problems, some weather delays, and some quality problems that knock the yields, if we could get under the 170, then I think that they could start thinking about a carryout of somewhere that'd start with a $1 billion instead of $2 billion in front of things, and that could maybe give us a little bit of a pop.
The good news all around, I suppose, is the demand for corn and soybeans remains strong.
It's very strong. I mean, as we're looking here, the export shipments continue to be good. Looks like we're going to make goals from what they looked at that and what's going on. One of the things we might want to talk about, though, is the one South Korean container shipper that went bankrupt, and we've got a whole bunch of containers sitting out places, and the ports won't bring them in because they don't know that they'll get paid for doing it. And that's a big consideration, to say that shipment's out in and out of goods in, and then our other things we fill and put back in and coming out could be a little bit of a snag in some of our export business.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today. We'll talk with you again in 1 week.
All righty. Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's out of Newmarket, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. In today's agricultural news, Germany's Bayer has raised its offer for Monsanto to $65 billion, or $127.50 a share. That in a bid to create a global seeds and pesticides giant. Bayer said it was in advanced talks with Monsanto, but warned there was no guarantee a deal would result. Its initial offer of $122 a share back in May was rejected by the U.S. firm for being financially inadequate. The record all-cash offer valued Monsanto at $62 billion then. Bayer raised its offer to $125 in July, but that was again rebuffed. Combining Bayer and Monsanto would create the world's biggest agricultural supplier and be a market leader in the U.S., Europe, and Asia. Bayer Farm Business produces seeds as well as chemicals to combat weeds and insects, but it's better known for its healthcare products such as aspirin and Alka-Seltzer. Monsanto is primarily known, of course, for its genetically modified seeds for crops, including corn, soybeans, cotton, wheat, and sugarcane. Such needs have attracted criticism from some environmental activists. The higher offer comes amid a wave of mergers in the agricultural sector. Well, Capitol Hill this week will be a pretty busy place as lawmakers return from their summer recess. At the top of their to-do list is funding the government, of course. That passed the end of the fiscal year, which happens on September the 30th, a task everyone expects to be accomplished through a continuing resolution, though a fight is still anticipated. Senate Democratic leaders, including Minority Leader Harry Reid and Agriculture Committee Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow, told reporters last week they would force a government shutdown if Republicans do not agree to a continuing resolution that runs only through this year. The threat comes as some Senate Republicans, including Majority Whip John Cornyn of Texas, have said funding decisions should be left for a new Congress and a new president to decide. But what about the ag issues? With Congress back until only the end of the month, they could leave sooner for their fall campaign break. It's unclear which agricultural issues, if any, will be significant enough to gain attention. While neither agricultural committee has anything scheduled, the pressing issue lawmakers might choose to look at is a farm loan shortage. The USDA's Farm Service Agency, or FSA, doesn't have enough money in its current appropriations to meet demand for all the loan applications it has received. While the department on Friday announced it is allocating $185 million to clear 1,900 long-pending loan applications, that move only clears 30% of the backlog. One of the first things that may actually happen this week in Washington, D.C. is that Majority Leader Mitch McConnell could bring up the Water Resources Development Act reauthorization that could occupy the senator's time into next week. The move could help Republicans bolster their message that they're putting Congress back to work. The $10.6 billion Water Resources Development Act, or WRDA, authorizes ports and navigation projects across the country, and for the first time this year includes money to help cities and towns upgrade drinking water infrastructure in response, of course, to the lead contamination crisis in Flint, Michigan. Look for McConnell to bring the bill up as soon as maybe tonight. That after Democrats again filibuster a Zika funding bill over objections to GOP-backed riders, or maybe it'll wait until tomorrow. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. It is public radio for the farming world. Three items to put on your to-do list. The first one is this Thursday. I'll be at Purdue at their ACRE. That's the Agronomy Center for Research and Education facility just to the west of West Lafayette for their annual Agronomy Day event. Come see me, but more importantly, come see the researchers that are working for you at Purdue. They begin at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time, that's 7:30 in the central time zone, run through the noon hour, actually through about 2 o'clock. And they kind of would like you to pre-register for that one, but it's not necessary. If you get a chance, look up Purdue University and Agronomy Day. You'll find the way to get yourself registered. But nonetheless, that starts at 7:30 central, 8:30 a.m. in the eastern time zone. It's the Agronomy Field Day at the Agronomy Center for Research and Education that belongs to Purdue University. And then on Saturday night, another item that you'll want to put on your list. If you haven't come to see Lovie Smith yet, you've only had one opportunity to see the Lovie era of football here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. Saturday night is Salute to Agriculture Day in Urbana-Champaign. Starting around 5 o'clock, you can visit the College of Aces tent for their tailgate. Be sure to come and tailgate with us at the College of Aces. That's a Salute to Agriculture Day. On Saturday evening, the Illini will be facing North Carolina in a home game. Lovie Smith era has begun right here. We will win. And then next Tuesday evening at 7 o'clock, I'd like to have you come out to the Champaign County Farm Bureau building. That's the U of I Extension building as well. It's out there on Country Fair Drive for one of our Will Ag panels. This one will include Kurt Kimmel, Greg Johnson, Wayne Nelson, and Joe Camp. Joe is with AgriVisor. Should be a really good event. That starts at 7 o'clock Tuesday evening, September the 13th. At the Farm Bureau building right here in Champaign County. It's also the University of Illinois Extension building for the county out on Country Fair Drive in West Champaign, Illinois. I'll tell you more about that as we get a bit closer. It's sponsored, of course, by the Champaign County Farm Bureau Marketing Club and University of Illinois Extension. The guest will be Joe Camp of AgriVisor, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Again, that's Tuesday evening, September the 13th. We'll start at 7 o'clock there at the Farm Bureau building. Those are some items you'll want to put on your to-do list for this week and next. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Harry Cooney is now here. He's at Growmark in Bloomington Normal. Thanks, Harry, for being with us. We always take a look at the energy markets with Harry at least once a month. Let's start with where you think we are at this point on the master of all the energies, crude oil.
Crude oil, well, good afternoon, Todd. Well, crude oil's had some interesting trade already this week. And in fact, on the holidays yesterday, there was talk from the Saudis that they had reached some type of a new pact or agreement with the Russians. And it seemed like it impacted the markets yesterday when this news came out. And then the more analysts looked at it and figured out what had they really agreed to, then it became a lot murkier. And so it appears there may be some type of cooperation between the two important countries in the world, or leaning in that direction maybe. It probably helps add a little bit of support to the crude market and the rest of the energy markets over time, but there was nothing definitive enough up front to really just take the markets quite a bit on higher as of yet.
If I remember correctly, and I think I saw the document, it was only, what, a page and a half or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't very much. Like I say, it was kind of like you know, when you light kindling wood in the fireplace, you know, go woof, and you know, and everything goes up, and then all of a sudden it dies out pretty fast though too. And that's kind of what happened to the market. I mean, it seemed real exciting on the surface, but then, like you say, once you start digging into it, there really wasn't much there.
Not much there. However, the document did say they'd work out details later, so I suppose we'll have more to chew on later from that particular part of the world where the Saudis and the Russians might be working together a little bit more closely than they have in the past.
Yeah, and that's why I wonder if there's not going to be a little more support under the markets than maybe what we have seen in the past. The crude market has been trading in a wide range here for about the last year or two, from about 25 or 26 on the bottom up to about the low to mid 50s or so in here. Now, if crude would ever surpass the low to mid 50s in there, that would probably get some of the people that watch price charts a little more excited about buying, and then it would probably lead to the potential for a further run up from there. So we're going to have to see. The $50 to $52 level is pretty formidable resistance here on run ups. So we'll have to see if we can get over that or not.
And I think I've got one more percentage to deal with here on this, and maybe you can confirm or deny this. I think I saw in the document that between the two nations, the Saudis and the Russians, control about 21% of overall supply across
the
planet.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I can't say that's wrong. I just don't know the number really, but that very easily could be. I mean, there's between the two of them, there's quite a quantity there.
Okay, now let's turn our attention to those things that producers are considering at this moment. Harvest is coming up. They have to think about energy supplies, both in terms of drying a crop down potentially, and of harvesting as well. So diesel and natural gas, gasoline, where do we stand?
Well, that's exactly right. We have adequate supplies across the board, really, and in the propane, very adequate supplies going into harvest. My guess is there's going to be a little bit of demand show up at the beginning of harvest because people want to get out there and get at it here now. We're hearing of a number of moisture levels down around 25 of just some of the early tests, but not much activity going on yet, but very adequate supplies of propane going into that. Diesel fuel also adequate supplies. We've talked for several weeks, probably several months now, about getting diesel fuel inventories filled up. Get that first fill taken care of. I think most producers have probably already done that, or if not, they'll be doing it very soon. And I would want to do that. Not as much because I think price is going to spike sharply here. More of that just have that supply in hand as you get into the early throes of harvest.
Hey, thanks so much. Anything else to cover before I let you go?
Well, the only other thing there is the election coming up, and I think I've said on the show before that the election really doesn't have any impact on my thoughts of the markets for energies at all. So it'll come and go, and we'll still be trading the energy markets.
Hey, all right. Hey, thanks so much, Harry.
Thank you, Todd.
Harry Cooney is with GrowMark. He's out of Bloomington Normal, Illinois. He joins us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Don Day is here. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Thanks, Don, for being with us this afternoon. Let's start with the warm, kind of muggy weather we have in the Midwest. How much longer will it be around?
Well, we are going to definitely see here in the coming 2 weeks several cool fronts that will be coming into the nation midsection that are going to put the brakes on some of this heat and humidity. Now, we don't see any really big blast of cold, but sort of a turning down of the knob of the heat, sending temperatures closer to normal when you average things out over the next 10 days. Now, for most of this week, at least here for the next 2 or 3 days, we're going to be looking at probably through Friday some pretty warm, muggy conditions just like we've seen. After that, we'll start to see some cooler air invade this weekend and into early next week. And then late in that following week, another invasion of some cooler air. That'll just get us to temperatures that'll be a bit more average, and there's going to be some fairly good chances for some precipitation as well. The northern and western areas especially look to get some good rains with these frontal systems.
Are we just making our change into the fall earlier, or is this a pattern that we can expect to turn back warmer later on?
Well, I think it's just a natural progression of things, and everything that we see here in the month of September, in at least the next couple of weeks, is nothing extraordinary. Nothing sticks out as being unusual for this part of the nation. You do start to see frontal systems get a little more potent. At the same time, though, we don't see the source region of the cold air coming in out of anything out of the Arctic or anything out of the Pacific Northwest or northern Canada that would be real cold, just enough to gradually cool us off as we should.
I'd like to check in on South America, the beginning of their growing season there, to see what conditions were like over the wintertime. And also into China. They had some unusual weather, especially in the northeastern part of that nation, where the bulk of their soybeans come from. Very dry to begin with, then a lot of rain, I think, last week. Can you tell me about either of those?
Well, for South America, I tell you, the outlook for the next week or so is very warm and dry. This includes all of Brazil, all of Argentina, just very little in the way of any early spring precipitation coming their way. Over into China, where they have in those northeast growing areas, have seen some very heavy rainfall here over the last week. A lot of that was due to some tropical activity getting into portions of mainland China and the east, northeast areas of Asia. And it looks like those northern and eastern areas, while some rain is in the forecast, they are going to have an opportunity to dry out with the heavier rains in the southern growing areas.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with me today.
Thank you.